Dankeschön. Man merkt ja an der Vorstellung und an dem Thema meines Vortrags, dass ich mir über was anderes vortrage, als das, womit ich mich hauptsächlich in meiner Dissertation beschäftige. Der folgende Vortrag, Butler's Social Ontology of the Subject and its Agency, ist mehr oder weniger der Versuch einer Rekonstruktion einer Position, wobei wir vielleicht dann gemeinsam im Anschluss an den Vortrag diskutieren können, wie überzeugend wir dies finden und welchen Beitrag es zum Thema unserer Konferenz leistet. Ich halte den Vortrag auf Englisch, was den Vorzug hat, dass es die Sprache der Autorin ist, die ich behandle, was umgekehrt den Nachteil hat, dass es nicht meine Muttersprache ist, weswegen vielleicht die Sprachgewandtheit meinerseits nicht immer so gegeben ist, wie sie das auf Deutsch wäre. Dafür bitte ich mich vorhin für Entschuldigung. One of the main issues throughout Judith Butler's work is the condition of possibility of agency. I formulate it that way to highlight that she raises a question which can be formulated in a transcendental form. Although one must immediately specify that she is not aiming at epistemology, as transcendental questions traditionally do, but rather at an ontology. In other words, Butler aims at an ontology of the subject and its agency by raising the question about the conditions of the subject and its possible agency. We also need to take into consideration that Butler sees the subject as always already socially constituted. As a consequence, the opening statement must be reformulated. Butler asks about the social conditions of possibility for a subject and its agency, to be discussed in theory that could be called a social ontology. I cannot discuss the variety of complex assumptions and consequences implied by this line of thought, but what I would like to do is highlight two aspects which contextualize it within the reception of Butler's work and within the theme of this conference, thereby indicating where I'm heading with this paper. First of all, discussing Butler in ontological terms, and not, for instance, in terms of discourse analysis, implies a certain reformulation of her thought in line with her newer works, in which she herself uses such kind of reasoning. One of the reasons why I'm proceeding in this manner is because it makes it easier to show the link between Butler's thought and phenomenology, which could lead to interesting and beneficial exchange of ideas. Secondly, with regard to the theme of the conference, it is intriguing that Butler, being a sharp critic of foundational thinking, attempts to think our ability to act freely without reference to, for example, metaphysical presuppositions, while nevertheless raising transcendental questions by emphasizing the necessity of inquiring into the social conditions of possibility for a subject and its ability to act. I will proceed by first looking at Butler's earlier works, starting with Gender Trouble and moving on to The Psychic Life of Power, where Butler, arguing mostly in terms of discourse analysis, puts major emphasis on the necessity of a post-foundational thinking. My aim is to highlight the most important aspects of Butler's concept of agency in terms of subjectivation, reiteration and alterability, which is the concept of iterability, and subversiveness. The second part of my paper focuses on Butler's approach in her more recent writings, beginning with Precarious Life, and discusses the concept of precariousness. My aim is to offer a discussion of precariousness's status in order to examine problems and potentials of such a manner of reasoning. Firstly, this requires an investigation of its connection with Butler's understanding of agency. Secondly, the emergence of a new line of argumentation along a social ontology of the body can be highlighted. The last part of my paper is specifically concerned with this new notion of a social ontology of the body, which opens up intriguing new perspectives for thinking freedom in terms of the body as a social phenomenon. I will start by examining Butler's conception of agency in her earlier works by comparing it to the positions she argues against. I will do so by considering the two articles which she published as a contribution to the debate printed as Feminist Contentions, a Philosophical Exchange, because these articles display probably best the post-foundational impetus of Butler's thinking. She writes that in the traditional view, I quote, agency is an attribute of persons, presupposed as prior to language and power, inferred from the structure of the self. So in a nutshell, she refuses to accept the position that states that agency is an intrinsic capacity of the subject based on presuppositions about its nature. More radically, she argues against the very assumption that one needs to presuppose an already established subject before one can talk about agency. She does so by pointing out the implication of such an assumption. First of all, that it renders an inquiry into the constitution of the subject impossible. I quote, we may be tempted to think that to assume the subject in advance is necessary in order to safeguard the agency of the subject. My assumption is that agency belongs to a way of thinking about persons as instrumental actors who confront an external political field. But if we agree that politics and power exist already at the level at which the subject and its agency are articulated and made possible, then agency can be presumed only but at the cost of refusing to inquire into its constitution. Butler is particularly worried about the political consequences of such a view, because it places the subject prior to the field of possible contestation. Quote, to claim that politics requires a stable subject is to claim that there can be no political opposition to that claim. Indeed, that claim implies that a critique of the subject cannot be politically informed, but rather an act which puts into jeopardy politics as such. A few pages later, she reiterates, in a sense, the epistemological model that offers us a pre-given subject or agent is one that refuses to acknowledge that agency is always and only a political prerogative. Butler's counterclaim is that agency is not a metaphysical or epistemological capacity, but a contested possibility under certain political conditions. Agency does not exist prior to politics. Rather, we have to investigate the condition of its possibility within the political process itself. Butler's main question is therefore the following. What are the concrete conditions under which agency becomes possible? A very different question than the metaphysical one. What is the self such that its agency can be theoretically secured prior to any reference to power? In order to answer this question, Butler investigates the processes of subject constitution. This is one of the main themes throughout her earlier works. For the sake of this article, I will focus on the psychic life of Bauer in my reconstruction. In this text, she states, quote, no individual becomes a subject without first becoming subjected or undergoing subjectivation. But does this mean that the agency of the subject is determined by its subjection? If that were the case, then it would be very difficult to speak of an agency. Butler, however, suggests that we take a closer look at the paradoxical temporality of the relation of power and subject, because it may lead to a different conclusion. She directs our attention to the fact that, quote, the power that initiates the subject fails to remain continuous with the power that is the subject's agency. A significant, potentially enabling reverse occurs when power shifts from its status as a condition of agency to the subject's own agency. This description enables Butler to formulate the question in a new way. How is it that the power upon which the subject depends for existence, in which the subject is compelled to reiterate, turns against itself in the course of that reiteration? How might we think resistance within the terms of reiteration? Or in a formulation that can already be found in Gender Trouble, how is agency, then, to be located within the possibility of a variation of that repetition? To get a better grasp of Butler's position, we need to consider her understanding of power in more detail. For Butler, power has no substance, no entity we can point at. Indeed, it has no reality external to the constitution of the subject. Power is nothing but the condition of the subject's emergence, and, therefore, cannot be considered independently of the inauguration of the subject. In short, power has no independent ontological status. Or in Butler's words, there is no power that acts, but only a reiterated acting that is power in its persistence and instability. In this context, Butler specifies the complex temporality of power. Because power is not intact prior to the subject, the appearance of its priority disappears as power acts on the subject, and the subject is inaugurated and derived through this temporal reversal of the horizon of power. We are confronted with two incommensurable temporal modalities. On the one hand, power is something prior to the subject, always preceding its emergence as the condition of its possibility. On the other hand, power is something that follows the subject. It is the effect of the subject's agency. The hiatus between the enabling power and the enacting power is precisely the side of the subject's agency. I quote, "The subject is itself a side of this ambivalence in which the subject emerges both as the effect of a prior power and as the condition of possibility for a radically constituted form of agency." The consequence of which is the notion of agency conditioned by power, but not necessarily implying the stabilization of that power. On the contrary, the act of appropriation may involve an alteration of power, such that power assumed or appropriated works against the power that made the assumption possible. It is also important to note that a subject is not simply produced as a subject at one point and then remains so down the road. Rather, the subject is, quote, repeatedly produced, which is not the same as being produced anew again and again. Subjectivation is a permanent process in which the subject and power are linked together, not as stable units, but in their very alterability. Quote, "It is precisely the possibility of a repetition which does not consolidate dissociated unity, the subject, but which proliferates effects which undermine the force of nominalization." Power can always be reiterated, and must be reiterated in order to be sustained. This permanent reiteration constitutes power's relative stability, but also its radical temporization and alterability. A situation which Butler, following Derrida at this point, signifies with the term iterability. As recent as in Frames of War, she states, "The idea of iterability is crucial for understanding why norms do not act in deterministic ways." She uses the idea of iterability because it evades every determinism. That is because iterability necessarily implies alterability, thus constituting the break that opens the possibility for agency. But iterability also evades every form of voluntarism, because the agency of the subject is bound to the condition of its emergence. To sum up, the objective of the first part of my paper was to show that the conception of agency in terms of subjectivation and iterability in Butler's earlier works can be read as a post-foundational theory of the subject's socially conditioned possibility to act freely. It challenges references to metaphysical epistemological assumptions and sets forth a view of agency as a contested possibility under certain political conditions. In doing so, it avoids voluntaristic as well as deterministic understandings of agency. Voluntarism is implausible because the subject's ability to act freely is bound to the political conditions of its emergence. But it doesn't lead to determinism either, because subject constitution is a permanent process that implies iterability, which is temporalization and alterability. So it implies a constant break with the enabling power, a break that forms the place for the subject's own power to act. In the second part of my paper, I would like to proceed with an examination of the notion of precariousness in Butler's more recent writings, specifically Frames of War. It needs to be noticed that Butler introduces precariousness as a technical term, and that it cannot be understood in terms of everyday notions such as precarity. Whereas precarity designates a, I quote Butler, "politically induced condition," Precariousness means something categorically different and cannot be understood in terms of a politically caused and thus also alterable condition. In order to discuss Butler's use of the term precariousness, I will now first analyze its structural function within her theory. I would like to start pointing out that the position she argues against remains the same as in her earlier works. And it consists of certain conceptions of the subject, which she summarizes under the label ontology of individualism. In distinction to her earlier works, she now argues along the lines of an analysis on the processes of recognition. This leads Butler to investigate the conditions on the basis of which recognition can and does take place, labeling these conditions as recognizability. Butler famously points out that the possibility of recognition that the possibilities of recognition are unevenly distributed, because the norms of recognizability enhance the chances of certain lives to be recognized, while it hinders the chances of others. In this paper, however, I do not want to follow this aspect of Butler's analysis, but rather want to draw our attention to another question. What capacity allows us to challenge these norms of recognizability? Butler indicates that there is another mode of perceiving a life besides recognition. She calls it apprehension. I quote now. So apprehension, understood as a mode of knowing that is not yet recognition or may remain irreducible to recognition. Unfortunately, Butler is very vague here, and I want to suggest the following formalization of her argument. Whereas recognition can only be granted to certain lives that fall within the sphere of possible recognition, established by the differential norms of recognizability, apprehension allows for a challenge of these norms by perceiving life beyond the sphere of recognizability, thus apprehending a life that is not yet recognizable as such. But then, the question of the condition of possibility for such an apprehension arises. If apprehension has no base within the norms of recognizability, then what is its basis? What makes apprehension beyond recognition plausible? At this point, I would like to suggest that it is precariousness which has the role of being the condition of possibility for such an apprehension. Due to the generalized condition of precariousness, a life can be apprehended as precarious, even though the norms of recognizability do not allow for it to be recognized as such. What is the status of this general condition of precariousness? Following an initial reading, there seem to be only two alternatives. Either precariousness, located beyond the norms of recognizability, needs to be seen as a new transcendental foundation prior to the social field. In this instance, the question is, how does the formulation of such a foundation fit with Butler's previous works, especially when we consider her insistence on a post-foundational thinking? The second alternative is that precariousness must be understood as socially conditioned. In this case, it is hard to see how precariousness is supposed to form a plausible basis for the challenge of the norms of recognizability. Butler wants to avoid both pitfalls and offer a different solution. She intends to offer an alternative by demonstrating how precariousness, while being irreducible to the domain of the social norms, is nevertheless implied by the social constitution of the subject. She needs to demonstrate that precariousness is an irresolvable part of the social ontology of the subject. Indeed, this demonstration, I claim, seems to be the major theme in Butler's work, beginning with Precarious Life and Giving an Account of Oneself. In this context, her text, Giving an Account of Oneself, this is the englische Version der Frankfurter Vorlesung, die sie gegeben hat, zur Kritik der ethischen Gewalt. So Giving an Account of Oneself is important because it shows the contribution of Butler's more recent works to her account of agency. Usually, we believe that it is our accountability and responsibility as moral agents that forms the basis for our moral contact. Butler, however, argues that we cannot presuppose accountability and responsibility, but have to consider the conditions of their emergence. She claims that, quote, narrative capacities constitutes, no, not more. She claims that narrative capacity constitutes a precondition for giving an account of oneself and assuming responsibility for one's action through that means. Butler, however, doesn't want to support a narrative account of the self. Rather, she is interested in the limits of giving an account of oneself. And in this text, Giving an Account of Oneself, she situates these limits of giving an account of oneself in four places: our own body, our unconsciousness, our primary relationality to others, and our embeddedness within language and norms. In Frames of War, on the other hand, she wants to defend a similar claim, but focuses on an argumentation along the lines of a social ontology of the body. Butler states that precariousness implies, firstly, living socially, or in other words, living in exposure and dependency. Secondly, precariousness implies, I quote, being impinged upon by the exposure and dependency of others. Because of this peculiar reciprocity, in which we are not only confronted with our own precariousness, but also impinged, whatever that means, by the precariousness of others, Butler calls precariousness a generalized condition. The most intriguing feature of the characterization of precariousness is that it depends upon the notion of the body as radically socially conditioned. Or to put it the other way around, the understanding of the body as socially exposed and dependent forms the basis for the notion of precariousness. In Butler's own words, precariousness is a generalized condition. Precariousness as a generalized condition relies on the conception of the body as fundamentally dependent on and conditioned by a sustained and sustainable world. If precariousness relies on a certain understanding of the body, it is crucial to analyze how the body is understood here. The last part of my paper will be concerned with Butler's social ontology of the body and its implications for the understanding of the subject and its agency. In Frames of War, Butler states, I want to argue that if we are to make broader social and political claims about rights of protection and entitlements to persistence and flourishing, we will first have to be supported by a new bodily ontology, one that implies to be thinking of precariousness, vulnerability, interability, interdependency, exposure, bodily persistence, desire, work, and the claims of language and social belonging. End quote. In order to understand this argument, it is crucial to comprehend the status of such a bodily ontology or ontology of the body. A lot is at stake here, because in Butler's account, the ontology of the body serves as the basis for thinking about responsibility and hence moral and political conduct. She states that, quote, if the ontology of the body serves as the point of departure for such a thinking of responsibility, it is precisely because, in its surface and its depth, the body is a social phenomenon. But what does it mean for a body to be a social phenomenon? The answer seems to once again lie within the analysis of subject constitution. In accordance with her earlier works, Butler understands agency as a contested possibility under certain political conditions, which requires an investigation into the social conditions of its possible emergence. In distinction to her earlier works, Butler investigates the constitution of the subject now in terms of the body as being socially conditioned. This investigation reveals not only there is no body outside of its social formation, but also that this social formation is at the same time the basis for the body's irreducible exposure and vulnerability. Quote, as something that, by definition, yields to social crafting and force, the body is vulnerable. It is worth noting how Butler speaks of a definition of the body here, which I read as an indication that we again need to reconsider the specific function of the body within Butler's argumentation. On one of the first pages of Frames of War, Butler writes, quote, it is not possible first to define the ontology of the body and then to refer to the social significations the body assumes. Rather, to be a body is to be exposed to social crafting and form, And that is what makes the ontology of the body a social ontology. The bodily ontology is a social ontology because it is based on the insight that every ontology of the body reads the body as constitutively being social, as being a social phenomenon through and through. At this point, the relation between the notion of precariousness and the social ontology of the body can be explicated. Precariousness is the generalized condition of living socially, that is, being exposed to and dependent upon social conditions for one's emergence and persistence. Precariousness is to be understood as the, quote, condition of being conditioned. And it is by means of being a body that we find ourselves as socially conditioned. The exposure to and dependency upon external circumstances characterizes the body as precariousness. The crucial question is, what does it mean to say the condition of being conditioned? My suggestion is that it is another formulation for the confrontation with the limits of one's ability to give an account of oneself. That is, for instance, the ability to lay ground to one's own existence as a body. This corresponds with the insight into the dependency upon external conditions for one's emergence and one's ability to act. The shared condition of being conditioned is what defines being a body. Following this reconstruction of Butler's argument, the notion of precariousness, which according to Butler can function as the ground for the formulation of possible obligations as well. So this notion of precariousness relies on nothing else but the ungroundedness of the body, that is, its dependency upon supporting social conditions for its repeatedly iterated formation. Through this analysis of what defines being a body, precariousness is revealed as a constitutive and irresolvable part of the social ontology of the subject, qua being a body. Butler is keen to show that this account of the body as being fundamentally exposed and dependent does not lead to a deterministic account of agency. Rather, she wants to highlight that it is precisely our conditioned body that enables us to act. Moreover, Butler wants to point out that it is by means of the shared condition of being conditioned, the generalized condition of precariousness, that we are enabled to act together. In one of her latest texts, she tries to, I quote, she tries to understand the bodily dimension of action, what the body requires and what the body can do, especially when we must think about bodies together, what holds them there, their conditions of persistence and of power. This view implies, on the one hand, that in order to understand shared action, we need to understand how bodies act together, how bodies are productive and performative. On the other hand, we need to take into consideration that bodies are dependent upon all sorts of support. That they, quote, can only persist and act when they are supported. To conclude, Butler's notion of the body does neither lead to a version of determinism nor to a version of voluntarism, vitalism. Rather, it wants to offer an understanding of agency as both conditioned and powerful. What I have attempted to show is how Butler has always inquired into the conditions of the subject and its possible agency. In her earlier works, she developed a post-foundational theory of agency based on a discursive analysis of subject constitution, understanding agency in terms of subjectivation and iterability. In her more recent texts, she attempts to rethink the constitution of the subject by means of an investigation into the social ontology of the body, leading to an understanding of agency based on an account of the precarious yet enabling body. For Butler, this social ontology of the body also implies the generalized condition of precariousness, which she wants to present as the basis for positive obligations and the possibility of shared action. Throughout her work, Butler shows that the ability to be free and to act freely can and should not be located in a metaphysical or epistemological capacity, and that it, therefore, by no means can be taken for granted. Rather, the ability to be free and to act freely has to be understood as a political prerogative, as the objective of a permanent struggle, as achievable only under certain political and social conditions.